Kurtenbach here with the Bay Area News Group, joined on the other line by Mark Medina, who's down in Houston, Texas right now. This is the Warriors HQ podcast, not an emergency edition. I don't think we need to break glass in case of emergency yet, but certainly a moment of crisis edition for the Golden State after they referred to it as laying an egg. I think that might be the politically correct way of putting it. That was a stink fest, losing to the Phoenix Suns for the first time in 4 years, with a big game against the Houston Rockets looming on Wednesday, and then on Saturday, a showdown in Oklahoma City against the Thunder. This might be the biggest road trip of the season for the Warriors, and they could not be going into it on a worse note. First off, Mark, how was your travel down to Houston? I know that can be a pretty bumpy ride.
No, seamless. Direct flight, and was doing work along the way. It wasn't as adventurous as during the Western Conference Finals last year. You know how that is. But, you know, in a few months, I'm sure we'll have similar experiences. But, you know, what I find fascinating when you're talking about the Warriors, and like this isn't a state of emergency, so to speak, but within a week span of time, the Warriors, who have been known to downplay the regular season and the implications, they've said it is kind of important. I mean, first it was, you know, losing by 33 points against Boston, and let's have a team meeting within the film session to talk things out on how they correct this moving forward. They have a pretty good 17-point win against the Denver Nuggets, the second-best team in the Western Conference. And then 2 days later, they lay an egg, or they suck against a team that has the worst record in the Western Conference. And all of a sudden they're back to square one about kind of reassessing the state of things. I just found it interesting that within less than a week span of time, you've had those big picture concerns when, outside of the Draymond KD incident in November, the Warriors weren't too worried about kind of the day to day and what it ultimately meant down the road.
Yeah, that Celtics game really messed them up. And you mentioned the meeting that they had after. I called it a come to Jesus meeting in our column. Then they lost Jesus by Sunday, which really difficult stuff. It's funny because they said it was go time. They showed it for, let's say, 3 out of the 4 quarters against the Nuggets, because they did give that lead that they opened up early on back to Denver in the second quarter, which is now becoming a theme for this team. If they have a bad first quarter, then they have a good second quarter. If they have a good first quarter, then they have a bad second quarter. But they're yet to put together a good first half. I don't know, in a couple of months, it seems like. That might be hyperbole, but it sure feels that way. And then they go out, and every radio hit, every column, every person I talk to in the lead up to that Suns game asked me kind of the big picture of things. And part of my takeaway from the game against the Nuggets and all of the hype and buildup that led into that game following the loss to the Celtics on Tuesday was, we know that the Warriors have big games that they're going to be geared up for on Wednesday and Saturday, the upcoming games in Houston and Oklahoma City, but it's that game against the Suns that they need to take care of business in. And I know it's hard for them to take care of business in those games, that the focus is not going to be there, that the energy is not going to be there, but you can't do what they did and go out and lose and expect anyone to really take you seriously as somebody who's turned the page and is ready to, you know, lock it in or flip the switch or whatever ridiculous parlance you want to use. You don't get consistency is a big part of this thing. And we're yet to see the Golden State Warriors be consistently excellent with DeMarcus Cousins in the lineup and getting utilized the way that he's been utilized. Ever since DeMarcus's minutes have gone up to 25-30 a game, the Warriors have been in a tailspin. And I don't believe that's a direct correlation. It's certainly not DeMarcus Cousins' fault that the Warriors are not the capital T, capital W Warriors right now. But there's a month to go until the beginning of the playoffs. And this is something I think we've talked about it before on the pod. You don't want to be figuring your team out. And there are a lot of moving parts with this. Cousins' introduction into the lineup creates a dynamic that the Warriors have never dealt with before. You don't want to be figuring that out on the eve of the playoffs or in the first round of the playoffs. You want to have that stuff locked down as early as possible. And I think that the Warriors recognize that after they got their butts kicked by the Celtics. But if they did not remain buttoned up on Sunday. And now I don't think we know what we're going to get against the Houston Rockets and the Oklahoma City Thunder. And that's kind of ridiculous, because I think we were all riding a pretty good wave up when they beat the Nuggets. You go, oh, they figured it out. They know what they're doing. And then they gave it all the way back, and maybe even then some. And obviously I wrote about this. You mentioned it in all of your excellent coverage over the last 24 hours. There is, as I put it, and I would venture to say you agree, but correct me if I'm wrong, there's some bad energy floating around this team right now. That could go away, could dissipate in the course of a couple of hours, but let's just run through real fast everything that happened after that Suns game, because all is not well in Mudville right now.
Yeah, and I mean, you just teed me up here, because now the caveat that I have to provide as a disclaimer is that assuming these guys are healthy, they're going to figure things out. I still think they'll win the NBA championship. But the problems that you cited, it's not even just executional things and role things and lineup things. Those are all valid things. But on top of that, there is that bad vibe where, you know, Kevin Durant, you know, there's not too much of a concern about his ankle injury. He had a right ankle contusion. He is technically day to day, but the larger concern is just how his mood is. When he, you know, left the game, a KNBR reporter was there with an earshot, and he was pretty frustrated, to say the least, about how the team's playing, understandably so. But it just has been yet another example of how Kevin has,
you don't think we can sustain it, Mark?
Exactly. And then the funny thing about that to KD is I said, yeah, I think you can sustain. I'm asking, what's the key to that? And then he said he doesn't know.
My favorite part was I was in the back, and there was a half second pause to where I thought, should I do it? Should I yell out, I don't think you can, just to see if he would flip the table over and go at me. I should have done it. I know. I'm honestly, he hears everything. He sees everything. And let this be a warning. I am contemplating calling out the BS in public.
Well,
and it will not go well for me, but I will fall on that grenade. If you understand my drift.
I'm sure he's hearing the podcast. So I'm sure he'll have some words related to you at some point, but it's not even just about
the first words I've gotten in a while.
There we go. Well, it's not even just about his mood and what that means, but there's some other moving parts here, you know, because of these things called cameras and these things called social media, Steve Kerr was caught telling Warrior assistant coach Mike Brown that he's effing tired of Draymond's, you know what, in the context of that, it was Draymond was getting on the refs. And,
you saw in that video afterwards, Draymond comes to the bench and you're like, man, I don't even know what he's referencing, because the first shot of it was from the NBC Bay Area feed. And the first shot is the Warriors coming off the court and Draymond looks normal. And then you see Steve, and it didn't take an expert lip reader to understand what Steve said. And then you cut and Draymond's on the bench gesticulating, kind of yelling at a Warriors assistant coach. I couldn't make out who it was. And it's like, oh, okay, now I understand. Because I didn't actually understand what he was getting at. And it was interesting today, as Steve told the media assembled in Oakland, that he was angry with complaining to the referees, which has kind of been a refrain of this team for the last, I don't know, 18 months or so.
Yeah, and that opens up two other things. One, yes, like last year, the Warriors have a problem with officials. They have 51 technicals. A lot of them, I think 13 of them are to Draymond.
Draymond's had a couple rescinded, too.
No, DeMarcus had one rescinded.
Oh, that's correct.
But DeMarcus still has, as always with his career, has gotten some technicals. Kevin Durant, so same with Steve Kerr. But on top of that, what does this ultimately mean with Steve and Draymond? Steve wasn't exactly forthcoming with that. I mean, as far as, you know, to what level he hashed it out with Draymond, he kept saying that's a private matter. You know, Draymond wasn't made available to reporters because it was those things called get what you need day and optional practice. And
the reporters did not get what they needed, Mark.
Yes, we did not get what we needed, but by technical rules with the NBA and the policies, as far as interviews go, if it's an optional practice, players aren't required to speak to the media. So we don't know exactly what Draymond thinks. And on one hand, I'm thinking, okay, well, they've been down this road before. They've yelled at each other before. I'm probably thinking that Steve has told Draymond before, during, and after games that he's tired of his, you know what, but you never know how that is, especially
the straw that breaks the camel's back. Yeah.
Right. And
it could be, who knows?
And here's the thing, you look at earlier this season, Draymond and Durant had their thing. Now Draymond hasn't spoken too much publicly about it, but I would totally understand it if he saw the way they handled that incident with giving him a one-game suspension, that they were aligning themselves with Kevin Durant because of all the implications of what that means for him and his future.
Good that's done.
So, yes. Yeah, you wonder, is this another example of that, or is it not really a thing and move on? Who knows? Yeah. But I it illustrates, beyond the health concerns, if there's a catastrophic injury to any of the All-Stars, all bets are off. But this illustrates the one other concern I think that could derail the team, that I don't know if they really have the fortitude to get through an adversarial moment. And you would think they would because of all their championship equity and experience, but because of how weird the season has been, and it got off to a weird start with that KD Draymond thing and Kevin being in his own mood with everything, I don't know if they can absorb that. X's and O's, I think they'll figure it out. But when it comes to the inner dynamics, I mean, Steph and Clay aside, I think all bets are off when it comes to anything involving Draymond, KD, or DeMarcus.
Yeah, I don't want to read too far into the Kerr Draymond thing, because contrary to what I imagine a lot of people would expect, and this is on them, those guys are wired in very similar ways.
Right.
They know when to turn on the charm. They know how to handle themselves in polite company, but they are fiery competitors. And obviously Steve doesn't have that same fieriness now as a coach, being much more in a public relations mode, it seems, than back when he was a player. But I'm certain Draymond will transition out the same way Steve has. And Steve was a tremendous broadcaster. No one doubts within 1,000 years that Draymond's not going to be a tremendous broadcaster. He could retire to the booth right now and probably make just as much, if not more, money. But I do think that they'll figure it out, or I hope that they'll figure it out, as two guys who are like-minded and work well together, even if that does create some clashes. But as I said earlier, it might be the straw that breaks the camel's back. There have been a lot of little subplots that, I don't know, Draymond is looking for a max contract. He turned down an extension this past summer. This might just be part of the souring. He knows that he's the odd man out should the Warriors decide to shake things up. I don't know where his head's at. I'm fascinated to hear the next time he speaks, because it could be extremely enlightening if he's cryptic, if he tries to brush it aside, things like that, and it doesn't feel like he's gotten over it, if he's kind of chippy about it. And he was chippy with us after the game on Friday, even after a win. He was chippy because he felt like he needed to defend DeMarcus Cousins.
That's all your fault, Dieter. You're beating up on DeMarcus. And,
yeah, because I was the only one. I love the fact that I'm clearly the only one who's noticed that DeMarcus Cousins isn't necessarily good at pick and roll defense. I mean, the genius that I am, seeing basketball the way that no other person has seen basketball. I mean, that's what they always say about me. But certainly an interesting subplot, maybe something that is brushed aside within hours. It might be over with now and everyone moves on, and Steve and Draymond are getting a beer right now. Who knows? I don't want to speculate too much, but in the positive or the negative. But certainly if this does linger, that's not good. No one wants that. I don't know how that manifests, but no one wants that. And then finally, in this whole, man, you lose to the Suns and everyone gets weirdly introspective, but Klay Thompson deciding to partially blame the Oracle Arena crowd for the Warriors' loss to the Suns on Sunday. I know Steve had some comments on that, and I thought he did a nice diplomatic job of handling those comments. But to be honest with you, I didn't feel like the crowd was out of it at all. And I didn't feel like that was a fair criticism coming from Clay, a guy who I can't remember if he's ever made a misstep with the media, but it felt in the moment like that was out of line. And going back on it 4 or 5 times now, I don't understand what he was getting at, because yes, the Oracle Arena crowd has changed arguably significantly in recent years. It is certainly a more Silicon Valley crowd than it was the 5 years ago when I started covering this team. But it was still a good crowd. It's not like we were in Charlotte or Detroit here. Like they got energized. There were people standing up in front of me pretty much the entire game. I didn't feel like that was the game, if there ever is one, to complain about the crowd noise or that they're not behind the team enough. And certainly If you do have those criticisms, I would argue keep them to yourself. Luckily, Clay has the cachet to where he can say something like that and get away with it. Because
yeah, can you imagine if Kevin Durant said that?
Oh my God, that's what I was literally just thinking. That would have been. Well, here's the thing. You can, because it would only lead it to the narrative. That would be if Kevin is in fact doing an incredible misdirection on us and playing all of us media for the fools that we are. Which, more credit to him, because we're falling for it hook, line, and sinker. That would have been the quote, because then we would have immediately all said, oh, he's gone. And there would have been 150 different, you know, hot takes and all this stuff. And then we would have totally forgotten it in 2 weeks. But in July, we would have had a lot of cold takes exposed. So Clay does not have that same relationship with the media. He certainly has I think Anthony Slater put it perfectly. I think he has an approval rating between 99 and 100% with Warriors fans. So he can get away with it. I still thought that it was out of line, though, and I still don't understand where that came from. It was completely out of left field to me.
Yeah, I mean, in general, going down that road, you never win because they're your paying customer, and they do pay a lot of money, number one.
For sure.
And it's not ever the chicken and egg argument. If you present a good presentation, they build it, you will come, right?
Right.
But I was particularly struck that Clay made that, because in the first quarter, I mean, he was having a really good game against the Suns, and he threw a reverse dunk down. The crowd was energized right then. You know, Warriors majority owner Joe Lacob leaped out of his seat and gave Clay a high five.
Yeah.
I do notice that generally, to your point, that because of the clientele with the Silicon Valley crowd, it does remind me, shameless Lakers plug, of how it is at Staples Center. But here's the thing that I think has been a misnomer about Laker fans at Staples Center, and, you know, by extension, Warrior fans. It's not that they're fickle or apathetic. It's more they're not the frenzied college sports crowd that are all cramped in a small gym with body paint and yelling every possession. They're going to a game as if it's almost a Broadway show or a performance. They're not going to be responding as if it's a golfing match and they're just giving golf claps, but they will cheer when something cool happens. So to solve this whole problem of the crowd, you got to play better. You got to hit shots. You got to defend, and they'll get into it.
Yeah, this is not Cleveland. This is not a place where the game ops is going to be blasting it at 10,000 decibels and telling everybody to get on their feet. And they just got to let it all out, because this is a cultural institution. It might have been in the past, but especially a 5:30 game on a Sunday against the Suns. Ironically, that probably was had the most kids in the crowd of any game I've seen in a while, and probably catered more towards the lesser affluent fan, but still it's going to be a sleepy atmosphere. It was raining. There's a lot of stuff. I still don't think that was un-Oracle like. And if the Warriors want to blame, if Clay wants to blame it on his own, again, that's his prerogative. If the Warriors on the whole want to blame it, but don't want to say it, that Oracle Arena is the reason, or the crowd at Oracle Arena is the reason why they are not playing well at Oracle Arena, which they are not. That is just deflecting blame, and it just leads it, you know, all this stuff is inconsequential. It comes down to how this team plays, and X's and O's wise, I don't necessarily have that much umbrage with how they're playing basketball. But we've mentioned this time and time again over the last few weeks, it comes down to the energy and it comes down to the focus. Those are the words that Draymond Green used. I will use his basketball genius and I will steal some of it and use that exact same terminology. Energy and focus. And we saw the energy and focus from the Warriors in the first quarter of that game against the Suns, and then it just went away again. And my concern with that at this juncture in the season is that this team has been playing bottom feeder defense for the last few weeks. I believe they're 25th in the NBA since the beginning of February in defensive rating. That is not championship level. And while we can go back in history and say, well, if a team hasn't finished in the top 10, they don't do it, save for that, I believe, 2003 Lakers team or 2002 Lakers team, whichever the second team was in that three-peat where they sort of phoned it in for a year because they were so much better than everybody else. You need to have
2001, I believe.
Was it 01? Okay. Yeah. I appreciate the clarification on that. But that was it was the second year Shaq, Kobe, and they phoned it in. It was 17th ranked defense in the NBA, which right now I think would be number one in the NBA given how things have changed over the last 20 years. But when you play that low level of defense, and then you're beholden to shots going in, and the Warriors have just tried to outshoot and outscore their opponent. I understand that's the goal of the game, but you have to play some defense at some point. And that is the big key to flipping the switch. And yes, it's difficult for this team, I would imagine, to care too much about March games, to say we need to take it to another level for, let's be honest, they're taking the number one seed most likely. And even if they don't get it, who cares? So why do they feel so compelled to do dirty work, right? And that's what playing defense is. It's dirty work. They know they're going to have to do it in the playoffs, presumably for the entirety of it, but at worst, two rounds. So why do it in March? But you can't rest on your laurels with stuff like that, because the gap between the rest of the Western Conference and the Warriors has come down significantly. We're seeing that in these second quarters, now that the Warriors have gotten their starting lineup fixed, that second unit isn't looking as good. And the depth of this team is a big question. The defense of this team is a big question, not something I thought I'd be saying this year. And ultimately, you know, this offense is still a bit, let's say that there's not grease on the gears of this offense right now. Whereas in prior iterations, we knew, okay, there's kind of two different kinds of smoke. You have the Kevin Durant ISO game. You have the Stephen Curry egalitarian 5-on-5, joyful, shoot from anywhere, three-pointer motion offense thing. Now you're adding in an interior post-up man in DeMarcus Cousins. And if it works out, that gives the Warriors a third kind of smoke. No one's going to be able to match that. But right now, it just isn't working out, and it doesn't feel like it's fitting together all that well. They don't have that many games to figure stuff like that out. And I don't feel, and I'm wondering your opinion on this, I don't feel like they have a lot of fear that this might not work out for them.
I feel like it's mixed. I actually think that they're still confident, but there are some signs of admission that they feel vulnerable. They're self-aware enough about their defensive deficiencies and their center position that they signed Andrew Bogut. I think number two, the fact that they're talking about wanting to get home court advantage. I mean, part of it's just a Steve Kerr trying to get his guys motivated. And also it's practically within reach. Like last year they had overlapping injuries to all their all-stars, and Houston Rockets were going on such a large winning streak. It's like, throw up the white flag. There's no point chasing it. But I think part of why they're going through home court advantage is, A, they feel like why risk that margin for error of having one less home game in a series, but also why put yourself in a position of having a less than favorable matchup in the first round, second round. That's not to say the Warriors are like afraid of anyone in the West, but if you're, to your point, talking about how the gap has narrowed, I would venture to say that the Warriors would much rather play a team like the San Antonio Spurs in the first round, yes, as opposed to the Utah Jazz, because Utah would make it more challenging. It would wear them down. And then by the time they eliminate them in the second round, they might not have as much in them. And so I think there is that feeling of, hey, they are vulnerable than they were in other years. And I think last year, like they, especially when they talk now that they've gone through it, they didn't feel good entering the playoffs. But I think in the back of their mind, they knew a lot of it just had to do with they weren't healthy. Here, it's a little bit of a scarier thing, you could argue, because they are healthy, but they're still not playing their best. Another head-scratching thing, and like on one hand, you think, okay, well, Steph Curry, like he's going to figure this out. But there's been a pretty large sample size that he's just not been shooting the ball well. Right. Like, I'm looking at the numbers here. 12 games in January where he went 42.4% from the field overall, 37.8% from three, which isn't bad, but like it's not Steph Curry.
Steph Curry, yeah.
And then the first quarter alone in February, 11 games, 34% overall, 26.5% from deep. And like he can go as many games as he wants to, including this most recent game against Phoenix, where he's like, oh, well, shots weren't falling, he'll get out of it. of course, it's Steph Curry. All he needs is one shot. But this isn't just a one-game thing, folks. Like, this has been happening for a while, and at some point, like, he has to become Steph Curry again.
Yeah, I don't. I never fear with Steph sort of the same fear that I had earlier in the season with Clay, which turned out to be unwarranted because when he turned it around, I mean, I think he's shooting 50% since like January. It's preposterous. I will say this about Steph's struggles right now. I don't think that they are necessarily in a vacuum. I do think that the inclusion of Cousins, and again, I don't want to come across as if I'm blaming DeMarcus for all of the Warriors' problems. That's a ridiculous statement, but it is a big adjustment. And I think that they have pretended that it isn't, and that might be biting him in the ass a little bit here, because Steph is still the point guard of this team. I know he runs off ball a lot, and I know that Kevin plays a lot of point guard, and Draymond plays a lot of point guard, or the quintessential point guard, man who has the ball at the top of the key and is distributing it, is not necessarily a position that the Warriors employ. But Steph is still the maestro of this orchestra, and it's on him to get DeMarcus the ball, because DeMarcus can't go get the ball himself the way that a Steph can, that Kevin can, that even a Draymond can. And it is such a jarring departure to throw it to somebody in the low post and not expect to pass out. The Warriors have struggled with this in some ways with Durant, even though Durant is the most gifted low post scorer I've seen outside of a true center, perhaps ever. But Draymond passes the ball out roughly 80% of the time. When he gets the ball in the post, he never goes up. It is a function of the offense. When DeMarcus gets the ball on the low post, he goes up with it. And frankly, as he should, but the ball doesn't move. It becomes sort of classic basketball, which is something that the Warriors have generally eschewed in their dynastic run. And so it feels like Steph is not getting as many in rhythm shots, that they're not running as many sets for Steph. And that Steph isn't able to kind of do the I'm the rover coach play that we have become so accustomed to seeing. And that's bringing about, in my opinion, more forced three-point shots for Curry, which, listen, he might be the great that's not a question. He is the greatest shooter in the history of the NBA. But if you're forcing them, they're not going to fall at the same percentage that they're going to fall when they're coming in rhythm. You can ask Klay Thompson that. I'm sure you can ask Kevin Durant that. You want rhythm shots. You want to feel like there's a flow. And this Warriors offense has not had that impressive of a flow over the last few weeks. And that's something that is very difficult to find. Once it's found, it's kind of hard to lose. It's a very spiritual thing, almost ethereal in a sense. But that's something that this team has to figure out. It has a bad mood. It has no flow. And it doesn't feel like it wants to do any hard work on the defensive end. And while you can't blame them for the latter one, you can try to figure out how to fix one and two and hope that maybe three could lead into one and two. I don't know. I think that there's a lot of problems with this team. And I'm having a hard time seeing over the next few weeks how they're going to sort them all out. But again, it might not matter because they're so much more talented than everybody else.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think when we're talking about all these issues, I think the two main things that are the driving force of the good or bad trends of what we're seeing with the Warriors is, one, the collective mood of the group. And to clarify to my points about Draymond and Kerr and Durant, I think that they, by and large, have enough to make this work. I mean, you can imagine about Draymond and KD, like the aftermath of that could have been a lot worse, but because of their relationships, because of their equity, they are able to still function as a team. But it does, I think, illustrate an example of when you have a championship team that's, you know, defending a championship multiple seasons in a row, there always is that point where guys just frankly just get more and more tired of each other, and you wonder, when does it reach that point? Might not, but you never know. But I think secondly, we're talking about defense. We're talking about Steph shooting, the bench. I think energy will basically largely help the Warriors just figure this stuff out. It's amazing how much that creates a difference in helping a team overcome a learning curve with a defensive scheme or a lineup combination or the starting lineup. I mean, remember when DeMarcus Cousins came in January, Right. He was in worse shape than he is in now, even though that is obviously still a work in progress. And he also wasn't as fully acclimated with the schemes, the plays, mm-hmm. but he was just relying on adrenaline and energy and just not being in a game for a while. That excited him. And the Warriors, they were excited with getting him back in the fold. And yeah. that suddenly dissipated. And I'm thinking, like, if they – it's hard to bottle that up now because you can't manufacture that. But they have to have something that will drive them to compete. And all those different learning curves of how they run the offense with DeMarcus and how they have that balance, that'll take care of itself. Same thing with the defense. They might not have the most perfect rotations, but they'll still win all the hustle plays. The bench might be imperfect, especially because of the talent and the different lineup combinations. But you have a few hustle plays here or there extra from the guy, the likes of Alphonso McKinney or Jonas Jerebko, or your guy, Kevon Looney or Jordan yes. Bell. Like, that'll make up for a few extra possessions in the game. So I think that's the main thing. And it's once they find something that will compel them to show that on a consistent basis, they'll be fine.
I don't want to come across as the sky is falling, because ultimately I yeah. know that this team has what it takes to get it done. But I just have far more questions about this squad now than I think I have had at any point in their dynastic run. I don't even feel like I felt this many questions about this team going into game 7 of the 2016 NBA Finals.
Right.
It just doesn't feel like they're solid footing. And that can change in an instant, and all of this is rendered completely moot. But going to your point of at some juncture, these guys are going to get sick of each other. I keep thinking back to what everyone said at the beginning of the year. The year prior, it was all about how it's going to be a grind, and it almost became a self-fulfilling prophecy for the Warriors, where they ended up with the 2 seed. It was a grind. Every minute of it was a grind. And there were a lot of things, injuries in particular, that kind of kept the team off balance. And they didn't really even figure it out at all, if I'm being honest. I don't know if they ever played exceptional basketball for full games, even in the playoffs, because let's not forget that they were facing elimination going into game 6 of the Western Conference Finals and down by double digits at halftime. And then they turned it on and they won that game. And then they go to game 7 and pretty much the same thing happens. They're down by double digits at halftime. And then they turned it on and the Rockets helped them out immensely. And then they played a Cleveland team that never stood a chance against them. So, yes, it was a grind. And then this year, going into it, they said, let's enjoy it. Let's make sure that this year is all about joy, about positivity. And the subtext to all of that was, because we don't know how long this is going to last. And it does feel like everyone has made the business decision as opposed to the feel-good decision, that they owe it to each other to suck it up, shut up, and go out and win another one. And then the cards will fall as they may. And I just don't feel like that's a great baseline going into a playoffs where this team is more vulnerable than it's ever been. And especially with all the issues that they are displaying currently. And I don't know if, you know, one game against Houston or two back-to-back wins, even if they are impressive, are going to wipe away all of these concerns, because man, they have lollygagged for an entire season. The last good stretch that they had came before Cousins came into the fold. They're yet to play exceptional basketball with DeMarcus Cousins around. And all of this negative energy, all of this bad mood, it has a way of bubbling up at the very worst time. Right now does not matter. But if this team goes down 2-1 in a playoff series, I don't know that they are... I know that they're mentally strong enough to handle it, but I'm not seeing the foundations of a team that's going to rise to the occasion the same way the team last year did. I just don't feel the same good vibes off of them. I've written in a couple of different columns and put it in different ways. The number one cause of death for dynasties is hubris. And mm-hmm. I can totally understand everyone saying this doesn't matter. The Warriors are so much better than everybody else and they will figure it out, because that very well could be true. And in fact, it's most likely probable. But I can't overlook the possibility that the Warriors are so confident, as well they should be, given their track record, that they are overlooking what could very well be fatal flaws in this team, because this team does not inspire me to believe great things the way prior iterations of these Warriors did. And I'm looking around a Western Conference where no one at face value should scare you, but you end up in a series against the Houston Rockets or the Oklahoma City Thunder. And that's a series that the Warriors very well could lose, especially if they don't come right and they don't have their act together. You look at what's going on in the East with the Bucks and the 76ers and perhaps even the Toronto Raptors, maybe the Boston Celtics, maybe their acts together now. Those are teams that were built, tailor-made built, to go out and beat a team like the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors' market advantage of playing progressive basketball is gone. Everyone plays that style now. Their market advantage of having four all-stars, that's still there, obviously, but everyone else has been accruing talent too. And the flip side of accruing all that talent at the top is you lose talent at the bottom. And the Warriors have not been able to replenish their bench to tap back into that strength in numbers notion that they've carried in prior years. This is a very different Warriors team. And I think that we all need to recognize just for a moment that difference, because a presumption that years past or that past results will bring about future success is a ridiculous notion. And it's proven to be faulty more often than it's ever proven to work out. I just feel like that possibility, and I don't know what the percentage is, but it's a possibility, needs to be more in the forefront of the conversation. Because right now, this presumption that everything's going to be A-OK and nothing matters, that you look back on that in a couple of months and we could be looking at, man, we really missed a lot of warning signs here.
Right. And the irony of some excellent points you made is judging by what the Warriors did with their roster after winning the championship last season, you would think at the time it had an awareness of, look, they need to be on the forefront to keep adding pieces and evolve so they don't fall into that trap of relying on what they had and just because it worked in one year that it'll work again. I mean, obviously they upgraded the center position with getting DeMarcus after having, you know, the likes of Zaza Pachulia and right. JaVale McGee, but there was a high risk, high reward of not only when he will come back from his Achilles injury, but what version of DeMarcus will he show and how he will integrate on a team full of all-stars, both offensively and defensively, that, you know, cater to two parties that are sometimes contradictory of what's best for the team and what would make DeMarcus feel most comfortable. And then when you're looking at the bench, you know, they're thinking, okay, well, we're willing to part ways with some guys that had championship equity and good locker room presence because their productivity has run its course with Zaza and JaVale and David West. And let's start developing a bench and let's get some younger guys so there is more depth and strength in numbers and have guys that can add some hustle in an otherwise regular, otherwise meaningless regular season game. But obviously that hasn't panned out, that youth experiment, with the fact that who they drafted, number 28, Jacob Evans, hasn't really seen any minutes on the floor substantially. And then you've seen a lot of hiccups, false starts with guys like Alphonso McKinney, Quinn Cook, Patrick McCall for whatever reason, and that's a whole other rabbit hole, not even coming back. And then, you know, Kevon Looney, I think, has been the stalwart, but Jordan Bell not having the second season of growth that the Warriors had hoped. So it's just very ironic that the Warriors thought that they were avoiding all those pitfalls that you're talking about. But so far, because of those strategies, it's created some complications so far. But, you know, who knows? Maybe it'll turn on its wheel and all of a sudden all those growing pains leads to playoff success because of the tests that they had to navigate. But a short answer to all that is there is just an unknown with everything. And that's what makes kind of the NBA season fascinating, because you don't know what all these regular season things actually mean for when it actually matters in the postseason.
Mark, we don't do short answers here. I think you should have learned that by now. It's great stuff. I'm interested in your thought on this real quick, and then we'll do a quick look ahead to what's going on with the Houston Rockets and the Warriors on Wednesday. But as you were speaking, something popped into my mind here. So this is all live. This might come across as really stupid. There are a lot of 2004 Lakers vibes with this team. this Warriors team right now. What's your feedback on just that stance? Because that was the Lakers team that it was the end of the Kobe Shaq era. They go and they play a Pistons team that no one expected was going to win the finals, and the Pistons just wiped them off the floor. And the way I extrapolate that in my mind is the Warriors in this situation are the Lakers, and I think the Milwaukee Bucks, who are doing historic stuff, could very well be the Detroit Pistons. Obviously a very different composition, obviously a very different game, but is there anything to that ridiculous hypothetical that I threw out, that the Warriors are the second iteration of the 2004 Los Angeles Lakers? You can say no.
No. I think that there's elements to that, but I guess I have to have a caveat here. Like, I cover the Lakers, but I don't have the day-to-day perspective there. I was in high school, obviously, in 2004, but I know
you know how it all went down
from that season. And also I know, remember talking to former, guys like Kobe and Derek Fisher and Shaq about that season, and Shaq reflected on his Lakers career. There are somewhat similar elements in play with, Kobe or Shaq having his free agency, and he's unhappy that Jerry Buss isn't going to be paying him and he's demanding it. And there was this awkwardness because he is, telling him at a preseason game, you should pay me, and it kind of embarrassed him. Kobe, not only is he and Shaq fighting, but he's planning to be a free agent. And then, he's coming off the heels of his legal case in Colorado. And then also,
there's no equivalent there.
Yeah, there's no equivalent there.
Let's make sure that we draw that line in the sand. There's no equivalent there.
There's no equivalent there, but, there was obviously tension with KD and Draymond. And then I think the similarity of, they added Gary Payton and Karl Malone after losing in the 2003 Western Conference semifinals to San Antonio. They thought, okay, these are the guys will help put us over the top. Let's win a championship for them. Do you equate that to DeMarcus Cousins? Like, hey, he's a proven player. He wants to win. How does he fit in? But I think when you're looking at this, I think it's more apples and oranges than oranges to oranges, because those examples, I think, were severe examples of how this could not work out, where I think the Warriors, like, they're not having the same kind of problems, from a severity standpoint that Lakers team had. But the thing about that Lakers team is they had so much talent, they got through it, but it was up until the end.
And I think that's maybe where my mind is at, where it's I think very highly of the Bucks, but the Warriors do have time. I say there's not a lot of time. It's not as if they have no time. And if it starts clicking, I can imagine positive momentum carrying a lot of weight here. And there is still 4 weeks left in the regular season. They will have a first round playoff matchup. I think that they've officially clinched. If not, they're not too far away. They're going to have a first round playoff matchup. It looks like it's going to be the Spurs, with the Kings falling tonight, and kind of seeing their playoff hopes dissipate in the process, which is a shame. We would have loved to go to Sacramento and gotten a NorCal first round series, but alas, that's not in the cards this year. But the Warriors still have some time to figure this out. But the good time to get that momentum going is Wednesday night in Houston. You're down there for the game, as you are for all road games. What is your, I don't know, Break down this game from your perspective going into it, because we obviously know of the bigger macro crisis moment that's going on with the Warriors. But the last time these two teams played, if I remember correctly, it was a classic. It went to overtime and James Harden hit that game winning shot. We've certainly seen some great games between these two teams before. We've also seen some duds before. I believe the last time the Warriors were in Houston this year, they laid one of their biggest eggs of the year. So what should we expect out of Wednesday's game from your perspective?
Well, what's interesting about the Rockets game so far this season is, even with the caveat that I'm not convinced these regular season results will actually matter if they face each other in the playoffs, which we could have a whole other conversation later down on that. They've all come at certain pivot points of the Warriors season so far.
That's an excellent
point. The Rockets won all three games, right? But the first time they played in Houston was the first game that Kevin Durant and Draymond Green played together ever since Draymond had that one game suspension for their argument. So they weren't at their best. It was awkward. There was, you know, some moments that they're trying to patch things up where you could tell Draymond was going out of his way to pass the ball to Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
When each of them were making mistakes, they kept saying, "Oh, my bad." And they're high-fiving each other. But the vibe and energy just wasn't there. The second game, it was a fun matchup. And to your point, they went to overtime. James Harden hit a dagger. And it seemed like, you know, the Warriors downplay this, but it really seemed like that really fueled them wanting to go on this prolonged winning streak. So that prompted that. But then the last matchup they had was just head scratching. It was revealed, I think, shortly before tip off that James Harden would not be playing because of what they call load management.
When was that? That wasn't too long ago. It was a few weeks ago.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, the Warriors treated the Rockets as if they were the Phoenix Suns on Sunday.
Let's not show up to play.
And then all of a sudden, the Rockets beat them up pretty well.
Yeah.
And, you know, you had to give respect. Like, Chris Paul is still there. And, you know, but the Warriors should have blown them out of the gym. So now I'm thinking, okay, the Warriors should be pissed off. They lost three times to them. They should be pissed off they lost the Suns. They know that this upcoming trip is filled with a lot of teams they could potentially meet in the playoffs. Rockets, Thunder, the Spurs. Even though the NBA has changed its schedule, they still haven't eliminated that absurd back-to-back from San Antonio to Minnesota. So this is going to be like a tough road trip. So I would think all those things mean that the Warriors, they're going to bring their A-game Wednesday. But I don't know. Like, you look at all their marquee games this year, it's been a mix. And part of it's the caveat of the circumstances, like that first game in Houston, and hey, maybe they weren't playing a full lineup like in Toronto. Like, Steph Curry is not playing, neither is Draymond and DeMarcus. But all things considered, they still had some healthy all-star or all-stars in that game. And when you're looking at it, what, they lost two to Toronto, they split to Milwaukee, split to Boston, lost to OKC, lost three to Houston. Like, they have a mixed track record when it comes to marquee games. And that's kind of this whole season. Like, well, now, you know, they're still first in the Western Conference. But as far as their effort level is concerned, it seems to be as unpredictable as it is for those ho-hum games against bad teams as it is for marquee nationally televised games.
Yeah, this would be a good time to turn that around. But again, coming off of that loss to the Suns, part of me thinks, well, they're definitely going to gear up. This is going to be like the Nuggets game all over again. And then the other part of me thinks, who the hell knows with this team anymore? I will say this. I wrote this the last time that they played. I get to rehash this column again. Because James Harden didn't play, but what a test for DeMarcus Cousins on Wednesday. I have been beseeching his pick and roll defense. It's certainly going to be put to the test on Wednesday night against James Harden if Harden does indeed play, which we can't take for granted apparently in this league anymore. I would love to see an outstanding defensive performance, the kind that he had against Denver. Against the Houston Rockets, that would assuage a lot of fears, not just for me, but a fairly sizable portion of the Warriors fan base, I'd imagine, too. Not that I have anything to do with those fears existing there. But yeah, it'll be an interesting one. And then Oklahoma City after that, which is a whole other bag of worms. But I'm sure we will talk after the Rockets game. There will be plenty to digest, certainly, and plenty to look forward to with that game against the Oklahoma City Thunder. As I said earlier, this is probably the biggest road trip of the year for the Golden State Warriors with everything that's going on and the marquee opponents that they have, at least to start it off. Mark Medina will be everywhere. He's going to all four stops on this road trip. As per usual, you can always count on him to bring you the insight and everything that's happening around the Warriors on a day-by-day basis. You can follow him on Twitter at MarkG_Medina. You can follow me on Twitter. I don't know why you would, but you could. At D. Kurtenbach, and subscribe to the Mercury News, the Bay Area News Group, the East Bay Times, however you want to get it, do it. We have a clay offer going on, Mark. What is that? What is the clay offer?
It's 11 cents a day for 11 months. The other offer is you should follow Dieter Kurtenbach on Twitter because he got a lot of good punchlines, a lot of good takes, a lot of good analysis, a lot of good use of video. It's all the above. So you're watching the game. You want some chuckles. You want some insight. Follow your our guy.
If you want chuckles, you need to follow Mark Media. Chuckles or groans.
yeah, it's one or the other. Groans, right?
Mark has made it a habit of putting out one painful pun a game just for me. You're in on our, if you're listening to the Warriors HQ podcast, you're now in on our little inside joke. Mark's puns are essentially bullets trying to kill me, and he's doing an excellent job. I had to get a Kevlar vest the other day. So, Mark, looking forward to this game, looking forward to talking to you after it, looking forward to reading all your coverage and writing my coverage after it and before it and all around it and probably during it too, because that's how we do it nowadays. But go have a meal at BGO's and we'll talk to you on the other side.
All right, we'll do it.